and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm yawning.
She's Jean Marie. Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we are not interviewing anyone. We're just talking amongst ourselves. And we're going to discuss a common issue, which affects millions each year. Head lice,
head louse, or Pediculus humanus capitis. It's a parasitic insect. It is typically found on the human head. Less often, it is found in the eyebrows and eyelashes. You'll get it there, but not as frequently.
Good.
Because head lice feed on human blood throughout the day, they live close to the scalp. Luckily, however, lice are not known to spread disease. So, although they are annoying for the most part, they don't pose a health risk.
And head lice aren't only a problem here in the U.S.?
No, ma'am. Head lice are actually found worldwide. Here in the U.S., children most likely to be the ones infested. Annually, there are 6 to 12 million children aged 3 to 11 who get lice each year. And worldwide, that number might be as high as 100 million.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
How is head lice spread?
Well, contrary to what many people believe,
like peanut butter. Sorry.
They spread that like peanut butter.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Contrary to what many people believe, they are not spread like peanut butter.
Okay.
Head lice cannot fly, jump, or hop. They crawl. Head lice crawl, and therefore they are spread by direct contact. I think that's the key thing. It has to be direct contact. Basically, you have to come in contact with the hair of an infested person. Anyone who comes in head-to-head contact with someone who already has head lice, those are the folks who are at the greatest risk. Spread by contact with clothing such as hats, scarves, or coats, or other personal items such as combs, brushes, or towels used by an infested person is not very common. Again, we're going back to it being direct contact. Also, personal hygiene or cleanliness in the home or at school has absolutely nothing to do with getting head lice.
Right. They're not eating dirt or debris. They're eating blood.
Well, I think that's a fallacy that people think that you're dirty or something's
right.
going on.
Right. Well, they're
at
not
the
eating.
House.
Yeah, they're not eating dirt. They're
right.
eating
Everybody
blood.
Everybody has
so
blood.
So it has nothing to do with. Yeah. Okay.
And it doesn't mean that your head isn't cleaned.
No, right, because they don't need oil.
Right. Head lice have three forms. The egg, also called a nit, the nymph, and the adult.
A nymph is an immature louse that hatches from the nit. A nymph looks like an adult head louse, but it's actually smaller. The fully grown and developed head louse is about the size of a sesame seed. It has six legs, and it is tanned to grayish white in color. The adult head lice may look darker in persons with dark hair than in persons with white hair. To survive, though, adult head lice must feed on blood. An adult head louse can live about 30 days on a person's head, but it will actually die within 1 or 2 days if it falls off that person. And also adult female head lice, those are actually larger than males and can lay about 6 eggs each day.
Okay, so if we could worldwide commit to everyone shaving their head, right?
Yeah.
For, you know, once.
Okay.
Then maybe
at
we
the same
could,
time.
Same time.
We'll get rid of head lice.
Well, I don't. It depends, I guess, what you do with all that hair.
But we could get in the Guinness Book of World Records.
I'm sure we could. Okay.
Again, that's another podcast.
Yep. Head lice hold tightly onto the hair with hook-like claws at the end of each of their 6 little legs. And head lice nits are cemented firmly to the hair shaft and can be very difficult to remove even after the nymphs have hatched and the empty casings are left behind.
It may be confusing to distinguish nits versus common hair debris. This debris, however, is often referred to as DEC plugs and hair casts.
DEC plugs, desquamated...
Desquaminated? You're right, desquamated.
Desquamated epithelial cells may occur when oil glands in the scalp work to compensate for the drying effects of chemical treatments. They're bright white, irregular shaped, clumps of fat cells stuck to the hair.
And hair casts are thin, elongated, cylindrical shaped segments of dandruff, which encircle the hair shaft and are not easily, easily dislodged. So if you have dandruff, that's why, you know, you might have dandruff on your shoulder because it can come off quite easily, unlike a knit or a head lace.
Okay.
Speaking of knits,
yes.
A knit or louse egg, it's smooth. It's oval shaped in structure and it is attached to the side of the hair shaft, ranging in color from off-white to brown. And it is slightly smaller than a sesame seed. Knits are always, always, always the same shape. They are never irregular. They're not fuzzy or encircling the hair, although the glue that the louse produces may be seen to encircle tightly around the hair shaft.
Okay. And if you have lice, you may feel a tickling sensation or something moving in the hair, which... Itching may be caused by an allergic reaction to the bites of the head louse.
You may also notice you have difficulty sleeping. Guess what?
What?
Head lice are most active in the dark.
Okay, I thought you were going to say chicken butt.
Sleep with the lights on.
Okay. So if everyone sleeps with the lights on and everyone shaves their head.
The head lice will stay sleeping.
Okay, I don't think
they'll starve to death.
I think they would evolve.
Okay. All right.
You may notice sores on the head caused by scratching. These sores can sometimes become infected with bacteria found on the person's skin. So you got to be careful. Try not to itch.
Okay. You may get lice through head-to-head contact with someone who is already infested with head lice. Head-to-head contact is common during play at school, at home, and elsewhere. Sports activities, playgrounds, slumber parties, camp.
When you're putting your heads together to come up with a new idea for a podcast.
Okay, there you go.
Although uncommon, head lice can be spread by sharing clothing or belongings. This happens when lice crawl or knits, which are attached to shed hair, hatch, and then they get on the shared clothing or belongings. Some examples could be like hats or scarves, coats, sports uniforms, hair ribbons, barrettes, combs, brushes, you know, the usual stuff. Towels, stuffed animals recently worn or used by an infested person. We talked about it earlier. Lying on bed, couch, your pillow. The carpet has recently been in contact with an infested person.
I would think like barrettes and hairpins might be more easily dislodging the knits from the hair, right? Because you're actually sticking it into the hair.
Yeah, but then you would think it would just drop off. It wouldn't actually, you know, go trans. But you know what? I remember you telling us when we were little that we, whenever we would go to the movie theater, that we shouldn't sit back and put our heads against the seat back.
Yeah.
Because you could get lice.
Yeah, I used to think that.
Okay.
Well, there are a lot of, like, urban myths and all that. But, you know, it's rather you're on the side of caution.
Right.
Right.
But we've all heard about the head lice fairy. And, she leaves little knits on your pillow.
Okay.
The diagnosis of a head lice infestation is best made by finding a live nymph or adult louse on the scalp or the hair of a person. Because nymphs and adult lice are very small, because they move quickly and avoid light, they can be difficult to find.
Wait a minute. They move quickly? I didn't
Surprise!
Know that.
They can move quickly. Yeah.
Oh, my God. God.
Okay, deep breath.
Yeah.
Here's the good
news.
We
learn something new every day.
You know, you worry. People worry more about lice than they do about mosquitoes.
I know,
the
but
lice
they move
are going
quickly.
To kill you.
I know, but I don't like it when they move
could.
Quickly. That reminds me of spiders. All right, go ahead, Ron.
Which, again, is another episode.
Yeah, we have a phobia episode coming up. We'll throw that one in.
Okay.
The use of a magnifying lens and a fine-tooth comb may be helpful to find live lice. If crawling lice are not seen, finding knits firmly attached to within a quarter inch of the base of the hair shaft strongly suggests, doesn't confirm, but it suggests that a person is infested and therefore should be treated. Knits that are attached more than a quarter inch from the base of the hair shaft are almost always dead or already hatched. Knits are often confused with other things found in the hair, such as dandruff, hairspray droplets, and dirt particles. If no live nymphs or adult lice are seen, and the only knits found are more than a quarter inch from the scalp, the infestation is probably old and no longer active, and therefore does not need to be treated.
And if you're not sure if you or somebody that you know has head lice, the diagnosis can be made by a healthcare provider, local health department, or other person trained to actually identify live head lice.
Now for the good news, folks.
Okay.
Head lice should not be considered as a medical or public health hazard, unlike what we were talking about with the insects and so forth.
Yep.
Head lice are not known to spread disease, which is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Head lice can be annoying because their presence may cause itching and loss of sleep. And sometimes the itching can lead to excessive scratching that sometimes can lead to the increase of a chance of a secondary skin infection.
Sure.
But you're not going to spread disease.
Right.
If there's one insect people should really be up in arms about, guess what?
What? Chicken butt?
No, I was going to say mosquitoes.
Oh, yes.
They're the ones that spread disease.
Absolutely.
But great. That's another episode.
Right.
Yeah, we'll come around to that in the spring.
Okay, great idea. But now back to head lice. School head lice policies often are determined by local school boards, local health departments, and many have guidelines that address school head lice policies. Check with your local and state health departments to see if they have any recommendations. Both the American Academy of Pediatrics and the National Association of School Nurses advocate that no-nit policies should be discontinued. No-nit policies that require a child to be free of nits before they can return to school should be discontinued for the following reasons. Many nits are more than a quarter of an inch from the scalp. Such nits are usually not viable and very unlikely to hatch to become crawling lice. Or, in fact, they may be just empty shells, also known as casings. Nits are cemented to hair shafts and very unlikely to be transferred successfully to other people. The burden of unnecessary absenteeism to the students, families, and communities far outweighs the risks associated with head lice. Misdiagnosis of nits is very common during nit checks conducted by non-medical personnel.
Right, like we said earlier, it might be dandruff, it might be those, you know, it could be any number of things.
But if they crawl, they're lice.
Could be.
Okay.
But is it a good idea for the parents to check their children's heads?
Yes.
Okay.
You should examine your child's head, especially behind the ears and at the nape of the neck, for crawling lice and nits if your child exhibits symptoms of a head lice infestation. If crawling lice or nits are found, all household members should be examined for crawling lice and nits every 2 to 3 days. Persons with live crawling lice or nits within a quarter of an inch or less of the scalp should be treated.
Well, I hate nitpick, but do you know how to get rid of the head lice?
Nope.
Well, I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
To eliminate head lice successfully, it's very important that all treatment instructions and steps be carefully followed and completed. You may also wish to contact your doctor, pharmacist, or health department for additional information about which product they recommend. Study after study reminds us that none of the experimental treatments or those already cleared by the FDA are 100% effective against head lice and nits, again, the lice eggs. And that is why the product label for, help me out with this.
Pediculoids. Pediculicides.
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 Yes. Pesticides.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Recommend treatment and retreatment, I should say, in 7 to 10 days. It also reminds us that children are exposed to 2 applications of pediculicides with the purchase of 1 treatment. Perhaps the greatest benefit to recent clinical studies is the way in which they are offhandedly and consistently stress that all lice and eggs can be removed and accounted for with combing.
Yeah, nit combs are, you know, they've been a thing for many centuries.
Yeah.
Combing is a scientifically reliable method to remove all lice and nits, which is another way to say can end the infestation. Literally,
So is shaving the head.
Well, okay.
There you go.
Yep. You have to shave your eyebrows and, you know, the eyelids.
You don't have to.
No, don't. Please don't.
Okay.
Yeah, no. Let's stick
if we
with
wake
combing.
Up tomorrow and everybody has a shaved head, we'll have some explaining.
We'll be trendsetters, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Good.
How about let's get back to combing?
Okay.
Okay. It's found that combing is the safest and most cost-effective approach. Again, don't shave your head.
Okay.
It's the most cost-effective approach that accomplishes what the chemicals cannot. It enables the families to be self-reliant, proactive, and preventive. It allows for regular screening and early detection, which makes the combing approach even more practical and realistic.
All right. And don't use the comb between family members without cleaning it between uses. And then I have another question.
Mm-hmm.
Have they ever made a longer handle on those stupid combs? Or are they still a little tiny handle? You remember those?
No.
I mean, little tiny teeth, yes, because they want to catch them.
I've only...
But also a little tiny handle.
Maybe they're for little tiny hands. I don't know. I thought it was something you hold with your fingers like this, with your fingers across and then your thumb wrapped around and you kind of
like
just
fist?
Pull through it. Yeah, and you pull through.
I don't know.
I've never done it.
Well, I'm going to have to go buy one and find out.
Oh, joy.
Okay. I'm going to do some research on this, folks. Don't worry.
But
don't use the comb between family members without cleaning it between uses.
And then it's something you'll have. You don't have to go out and buy new stuff because you have a knit comb.
Because you got to clean it, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and if you don't clean it, then guess what?
What?
What? Chicken butt? Is it chicken butt this time?
Not this time. Let's try that one again later.
Okay.
We're actually opening up for cross-contamination if
you don't clean it very well. Sure.
Consult your pharmacist or your doctor before applying or using the lice treatment pesticides when the person involved happens to be pregnant, nursing, has allergies, asthma, epilepsy, any pre-existing medical conditions, or has lice or nits in the eyebrows or eyelashes, and never use a pesticide on or near the eyes.
And this isn't a typical pesticide. It's not the same stuff you use out in your garden, for example. It's a specially made
pesticide.
Chemical right. for treating. Yeah.
Pediculicide.
Yes. Homes or schools don't get head lice. People do.
Yes.
So head lice are human parasites and require human blood to survive.
Not school blood.
Right. They're not eating those books. Vacuuming is the safest and best way to remove lice or fallen hairs with attached nits from upholstery, upholstered furniture, rugs, stuffed animals, or car seats, wherever someone with head lice may have rested their head. Wash all bedding and recently worn clothing in hot water and dry in a hot dryer. Combs and brushes may be soaked in hot water, not boiling water, because most of our combs and brushes these days are plastic, for 10 minutes.
Okay.
And for more information, you can look at the National Pediculosis Association website. How did I do with that one?
You did good.
Yeah, as far as we know. Yeah.
Okay. So it's the Pediculosis Association website, headlice.org. That was easy enough.
Yeah.
Search online for lice treatment salons or other in-home services.
All right. A couple of maintenance tips. Coats and hats should be hung separately and spaced so they do not touch. Lice do not hop, jump, or fly. They just crawl fast.
Right. So in schools, you'll see with younger children that they have cubbies that are separated.
To separate them.
Mm-hmm.
Hats should be tucked into coat sleeves. Coats should not be piled up or stacked. Children should not share clothing or headgear. Remind parents of these important screenings often. Detecting head lice and nits as early as possible, removing them safely and effectively, and continuing to screen as part of their routine hygiene is important. Encourage the children and help them feel comfortable about speaking up if they feel itchy.
Recommendations of evidence-based practices include screening of family members and close contacts, no regular screenings or notifications, and no notification of classmate parents if more than one student is affected in any class. The school nurse can actually determine whether to examine all the students in a class or to provide information about head lice to all the parents or guardians that are in that same class. Notification of parents at the end of the school day to treat or remove nits closer than a quarter inch from the scalp, so they're not sending kids home for lice. In Illinois, we did, the laws just changed recently. They don't recommend classroom-wide screenings if one person has lice, or regular school-wide screenings like we had when we were young and there were dinosaurs. Notes home to parents of classmates, or immediate exclusion upon the discovery of an infestation, or NITFERI policies. These are all
things of the past.
Antiquated policies that no longer need to be applied.
I've got a question for you guys. Mm-hmm. Did you know that desiccated or dried up head lice and their eggs, which again are called nits, have been found on the hair and scalps of Egyptian mummies?
Yep.
Nope. Yep. I didn't know that.
They've actually found, well, okay, I won't.
Say it again.
Yeah, but like they found ticks on, you mummies. Know, and yeah, mummified remains and stuff too.
Wow.
So suffice it to say they've been around for a long time.
Yeah. And you can find worms in the intestines of people that were mummified. And
wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think.
Something to do on your weekend.
No, I just think that covers everything and more than what we wanted to cover.
Okay.
If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact Gene at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
Sure. And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. And as always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard in this podcast, and don't go digging up Egyptian mummies to look for lice.
On that note, we'll see y'all next week.
Yep.
All right.